It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Thursday. Light the tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. However you're listening, wherever you're listening, we just thank you so much that you are doing so. Welcome into today's presentation. I am Jeff Howe. It is a Lost Our Way Thursday. We know where Craig is. Craig is in Oklahoma City getting ready to call an elimination game in the Phillips 66 Big 12 Baseball Championship in Oklahoma City. That game scheduled for a 12:30 first pitch. But we'll let you know exactly when that game is going to be played, when you can expect to hear Craig and Roger on the call. And, of course, Texas playing the elimination game because the Longhorns suffered a first-round loss in the tournament as the number one seed, 5-1 to West Virginia last night. We'll talk about that game. We'll look ahead to today's elimination game against Oklahoma and a whole lot more on today's edition of the program. Let me bring in our esteemed producer. I don't do this by myself. Even on days Craig is not here, this show would not go off any kind of way resembling smooth if it wasn't for our esteemed producer behind the glass, the publisher, curator, otherwise major domo, FlexATX, FlexATX.com, at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram. He is the one and only Snoop Daniel. Snoop, how are you on a Thursday morning?
I'm good. A step closer to week. I already got my direct deposit. But, dude, like, the first of the month isn't until next Tuesday. And like, here we get paid, like, you know, on the 1st and the 15th. So it's a long way until I get paid again. So I might need to ration it out.
I love, that's, you know, of all the things you could talk about, Snoop, that you got to let the listening audience know. Direct deposit hit.
Yep.
So it's a good day. It's a good day for Snoop Daniel. So I mentioned we're going to talk Texas baseball. We've got to talk about the reason why I was out yesterday, because I was in Houston. Steve Sarkisian partook in the annual University of Texas Day put on by the Touchdown Club of Houston. You heard Bucky and Aaron talking about that this morning. I was down there yesterday, so I can anything that needs to be put into context or whatever needs to be discussed from that event, and there was a lot to take in. We'll talk about that today. And Snoop, today there's a reason to celebrate because it finally feels like I can latch on and now, you know, enjoy my off season and do off season content at Horns 24/7 and things of that nature. As of today, we have hit the 100-day mark until kickoff. So you're 100 days. So tomorrow, when we have a show, we'll be into double-digit days, no longer triple-digit days, counting down until the start of football season.
So do we pick out former UT Longhorn jerseys and put out them 99 through 1? I think that's...
I don't know if he did it on Twitter. I saw it on Facebook this morning. I like what CB did. So CB for 100, because normally, like, you would have, you know, you'd find, like, a throwback game or something where guys have, like, the 100th anniversary of college football, you know, logo on the side of the helmet above the steer. I like what CB did. So he had it was a kind of three-panel image with Hudson Card wearing 1. Tariq Black, 0, and DeMarvian Overshown, 0, because now you can wear 0. So 100, I'm like, oh, that's a nice clean look for a 100 days until kickoff. So, yeah, 100 days until kickoff. Well, we can talk about great Longhorn Snoop that have worn various jersey numbers. We'll do that.
Nobody's worn 100.
No triple digits. You can have the single digits. You can wear 0. I don't know if you can wear 00. I don't think you can. I don't know if that the NCAA allows that, but at any rate, yeah, we'll do 99, and then so when we're back on Tuesday, I don't know, I was told there would be no math involved. My Florence High School education is showing up.
95,
yes, we can get to the 95s. Your favorite Longhorn on the current roster, Snoop, wears 95.
Alfred Collins,
yeah.
Did Marcus Tubbs wear 95?
Marcus Tubbs wore 95.
Ooh, look at me. And for those
unaware, why would Snoop remember Marcus Tubbs? Why would you remember Marcus Tubbs?
Because he went to DeSoto.
Exactly. He's recruited as a tight end out of DeSoto back in the day. And then
used to be a little skinny twig.
I think when he signed with Texas, I think they listed his weight at like 240 or 245. And he ends up being over 300 pounds as a first-round draft pick by the Seattle Seahawks. So was on a Super Bowl team. But anyway, we'll talk plenty of Texas football. Coming up here in less than 10 minutes, we're scheduled to speak with Texas softball head coach Mike White. Longhorns are in a super regional getting ready to take on Oklahoma State, win that, and they are in the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City. So we'll talk to Coach White and set the table for the super regional. We've got our two Longhorn notebooks. Obviously, we've got Inconceivable as well. It's not a Friday, so no low-hanging fruit from the most flaccid state in the union, but we've got other items for Inconceivable. There's one, there's one, Snoop, that it's not a current news item, but it's definitely in the TMI category. It was a story that I hadn't heard, and I'm kind of floored that this celebrity willingly shared it, so we might have an audio version today of Inconceivable. Right. So we'll see how that goes. But
it's inconceivable that we lost to West Virginia.
Yeah, that's as good a place as any to start, Snoop. Last night, Texas falls 5-1 to West Virginia in the opening round game of the Big 12 tournament in Oklahoma City. You know, it's interesting with Ty Madden. There is some concern about Ty Madden. I know he's a fastball slider guy. He's been working with the changeup a little bit, and David Pierce said he's been working really hard to try and develop that third pitch, which I think that's why you can maybe see some of the command issues he had yesterday. But this is the second time in as many starts where West Virginia has really been able to get to Ty Madden. He goes 6 2/3 yesterday, gives up 3 runs, 3 hits, walks 2, strikes out 5, goes 109 pitches. So I think that's been the main issue that I'm concerned about in Ty Madden's last two starts, is it's not necessarily the fact that he's giving up hits, that he's giving up runs. It's kind of the fact that the pitch counts in his last few starts have been elevated in the early innings, where you've really got to mash the gas in the middle innings. But, you know, yesterday was one of those days, Snoop. He didn't get a whole lot of help. If you look in the batting order, 2 through 5, that's Mitchell Daly, Zach Zubia, Ivan Melendez, and Cam Williams. Yesterday, those four guys combined to go 1 for 13 with 5 strikeouts. And there were points in the game, especially in the later innings, when Texas had chances to make things happen. And I won't necessarily throw Mike Antico into that mix, because that's maybe more of a coaching decision as to why he got caught in the double play when he did. But, you know, it's Cam Williams getting picked off at second base, that situation. That just can't happen. And you know, I was driving back from Houston yesterday. I caught a little bit of Kevin catching up with Chad and Trey in the kind of the radiothon that Shirts and Skins ended up doing yesterday, with Craig and I out. And then Triple Option got the day off because Chad couldn't do math and look at a clock and figure it out.
He's a benevolent.
He owned it. Chad owned it. To his credit, he owned it. But I heard Kevin talk about, and this is one thing that's kind of been one of my issues with this baseball team. One of the very few issues I've got. Now, base running is going to be the death of this team. And you look at even in games they've won, they've made some really head scratching mistakes on the base paths. And some of it is maybe David Pierce sending runners when he shouldn't. Some of it's guys getting picked off. Some of it's guys getting themselves put in bad situations. But whatever the case, base running is one of those deals where I'm like, man, it's going to be the death of this team. And it was yesterday. And, you know, I asked David Pierce in the post game last night, Snoop, you know, because when you look at this roster, and I thought about this, if you look at just your regular position players, the guys that are there every day, you know, Zach Zubia is the only guy that has played postseason baseball in a Texas uniform. And the last time he played in the postseason was as a redshirt freshman in 2018. You know, Mike Antico's been in the postseason as well. He played in regionals at St. John's. But, you know, the bottom line is this is a baseball team that, even though they've been in big regular season games, even though they've logged major innings on the mound, significant at-bats throughout the season, there's something about postseason baseball and tournament baseball that's maybe a little bit of an adjustment. Well, when I asked David Pierce about that last night, I think he hit the nail on the head. You know, he talked about Tanner Witt coming in, and Tanner Witt, you look at his final line, he went 1 2/3, did give up a couple of hits, a couple of runs, but he struck out three, and you look at his initial outing when he came in and replaced Cole Quintanilla, he got two massive strikeouts. And so he wasn't – David Pierce wasn't that concerned about the experience factor in the postseason because of the way his guys compete. And I say all that to say this, Snoop, I thought he summed it up best when he said, look, we just flat out didn't play well, and West Virginia did. They didn't play – Texas didn't play well enough to win the game. And I think that's pretty much all it boiled down to, just kind of a – just a sloppy game. And credit Jackson Wolfe, the West Virginia left-hander. You know, Snoop, you know enough baseball. When you're facing a 6'7 lefty who can locate it the way he was last night, and I thought McIntosh did a great job behind the plate framing some stuff, because there were some borderline ball strikes that I thought, had you not had a catcher back there that understood how to properly frame a pitch and really understand the strike zone, you could have gotten yourself into a world of trouble and a lot of hurt. So credit Jackson Wolf, but going back to the guys 2 through 5 in the batting order, again, the 1 for 13 with 5 strikeouts, there were times where they, I don't want to say they took at-bats that were not competitive, but they should have made it harder on Jackson Wolf than it was. They, you know, they needed to take just a few more hacks and maybe work the count a little bit and stay alive, and especially just understanding the strike zone. Like I said, on there were a couple strikes in the Melendez AB late in the game that really stood out, that were really borderline. But at the end of the day, you just got to simply do a better job swinging the bat. Simply have to do a better job of playing clean baseball than Texas did yesterday. So the Longhorns will try to get back after it coming up a little bit later this afternoon against Oklahoma. Again, that game tentatively scheduled for a 12:30 start, which would be a 12:15 pregame. I'm going to go ahead and assume, and we'll keep you updated on the Baylor K-State elimination game that's going on right now in Oklahoma City.
You want to try to eavesdrop? Hold on. Hopefully Craig doesn't say anything crazy. Hold on.
Yeah, let's I don't want to eavesdrop. Hey,
we're going to like Shannon Sharp and Julio Jones.
Yeah, say, so I was kind of out of the loop yesterday, Snoop, going to Houston and back. Did Julio admit to not knowing that he was live on the air, or did he just not care?
I don't know. Like Chad and Trey were talking about it yesterday, and that's how I heard about it. So I don't know. I didn't actually see it. So that was funny, though.
Yeah.
Hey, come on to the Cowboys, man. I mean,
need another receiver.
I know. Like, how can you play Cooper and Jones
and Gallup and CeeDee Lamb?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah, someone on the Specs text line, 337-3776, Specs text line is wide open. Somebody asking, where was the bunting last night? And I thought that was interesting. There were a couple of times where I thought they could have used the bunt game. David Pierce said, I heard him in the post-game interview with Craig and Rogers, said he didn't feel like there were, you know, advantageous bunt situations. But that's another thing, you know, the short game for them, Snoop, this year. And look, I'm getting into kind of nitpicky things. You can say they're nitpicky.
No, because they hit into a double play.
These are the kinds of things that if you want to go win a national championship, you want to make a good run in the postseason, you've got to make sure you're right in these certain areas, like base running, you know, making sure you're playing clean baseball, making sure your short game is good. And I won't say their short game has been bad. It's just been inconsistent. It hasn't been there. They've gotten some bunt singles. You know, Eric Kennedy, I think, has something like 13 bunt singles this season. They've been really good in drag situations. You know, but other than that, there's been times where they've needed to move a runner over in games, and it's just been hit or miss. So I don't think the short game, the bunt game, is something that this team can necessarily rely on right now. But and even then, it does. I don't know that – I don't want to say David Pierce lacks confidence in the bunt game, but it's not. I wouldn't say it's a strength of this team, definitely, like we saw from some Augie Garrido's teams. Boy, you know, we've kind of jumped the shark talking baseball in this market and with the Portions fan base, when for years under Augie there were complaints about, you know, they bunt too much, and now it's, where's the bunting? Why isn't the bunting good? It's part of the deal. But I would just say the short game is not a strength of this team right now. We're waiting for Texas softball head coach Mike White to join us. He is scheduled to join us here any minute now. So we'll stick with it here for a little bit and see if we can get connected with Coach White. You know, I do want to say, Snoop, yesterday, so I mentioned this yesterday, I was down in Houston. The Touchdown Club of Houston put on their annual Texas Day, and they'll do it for the different coaches in the state. They recently had a Baylor night. Dave Aranda went down and spoke, and they're doing one, I think, next week with Texas Tech. Matt Wells is supposed to be in town. Basically, the head coach goes down there. It's one of their big fundraisers of the year, and you know, it's the kind of the take picture, sign autographs thing, and he has a media availability, and then you'll take questions from fans, and that's where the whole, you know, Sark got asked, do Alabama players really go to class? And that's when it wasn't taking a shot at Alabama. There was laughter in the room, and it was kind of like a tongue-in-cheek thing. Like, oh, what else is there to do in Tuscaloosa except play football and go to class? So there was that. It wasn't like Sark just taking an intentional dig at Nick Saban. It was a question he was asked. But so I was down there, and I'll tell you what, Snoop, that was about probably 2 hours. Two of the most normal hours I've had since last year when we started, you know, stay-at-home orders and everything got shut down last year. Two of the more normal hours I've had. And it was kind of refreshing, and I was telling Chad this yesterday. Steve Sarkisian accepted the job, took the job, and was announced as the next Texas head coach on January 2nd. Yesterday, May 26th, was the first time I had been face-to-face and been able to have a face-to-face interaction with Steve Sarkisian. Like, that is nuts for, you know, and it was the same with the other members of the, you know, the beat media who were there. Like, it's crazy to think that, you know, beat reporters haven't gotten a chance to meet the Texas head football coach until several months into the job, but such is life. And hey, you know, something else I took from that deal yesterday, if you want to know how legit the Austin real estate market is now, think about this. Sark got to town in January. He just got moved into his new house last week. So if the head football coach of Texas is having trouble finding a house and getting moved in, Snoop, there ain't much hope for the rest of us.
Well, I'm sure he didn't move into like a apartment at the Domain.
No, he's not down there with you in your neck of the woods in Del Valle.
Where I wish I was.
Rooming with somebody who's burning heaters, apparently. And doing whatever.
Oh, okay. Heater is a cigarette.
Yeah, yeah. Doing whatever shenanigans you guys do down there.
Was Sark's wifey there?
I did not see the first lady of Texas football there yesterday.
I want to party with her.
You want to party with Mrs. Sark?
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure we find a way to cut that into a promo. But no, it was as normal could be. And the other thing that I liked about it too, we did get some football talk, and we'll get into that here in a little bit. We did get into some football talk. Didn't hear one question about the Eyes of Texas situation, and Sark was not asked, do you want to play the A&M game? Those two questions, which typically do get asked, especially the Eyes of Texas one lately, neither one of those got asked yesterday. So it was just a nice,
yeah, y'all going easy on him.
Nice, refreshing day. Well, dude, I'll be honest. Like, we talked about the Eyes. I mean, I don't know what more needs to be said about it than what's already been said about it. And the same thing with the A&M game. Like, look, it's going to get played at some point. I'm sure the competitor in Sark. I'm sure the competitor in Sark would like to play that game. Now, he was asked what was his best game at BYU statistically, and it is when A&M went to Provo in 96 and lost the Pigskin Classic to a BYU team, quarterbacked by Steve Sarkisian, and he did light the Aggies up. So that was really kind of the only A&M reference in there yesterday. But I thought Sark put on a really good showing for himself, just talking to some of the boosters and the donors afterwards after it was over. You know, Charlie Strong just never made that connection with the fan base. And I say this all the time, Snoop, like if people had gotten to know, like, kind of the off the record Charlie Strong, like if you're just having, like, you and I are having a conversation right now, if people had had those kinds of conversations that, like, I had with Charlie Strong, I think everybody would have universally loved Charlie. He was a totally different guy just talking one-on-one than he was in a press conference setting or in a setting like that where he's addressing a large room of people. Likewise, you know, with Tom Herman, I don't think we ever got to know the real Tom Herman for a variety of reasons, because you felt like, okay, is this a front? And then after a while, it's just, we've been down the Tom Herman road talking about, you know, just the things he said weren't always backed up, and there were contradictions, and you didn't feel like you were dealing with a genuine person. So there's no sense in going down that road. But, you know, Sark, at least right now, gives off a pretty just kind of relaxed, chill vibe, and you feel like you're dealing with authentic Steve Sarkisian. And anytime he's talked about expectations for this team in 2021, there aren't these, you know, kind of grandiose ideas or we need to win X amount of games. The message has been and continues to be, look, there's talent on this roster. We as coaches have to develop this talent. The players have to want to be developed and want to work and want to be great. And they feel like they're going to get somewhere. He knows it's a process. So to me, it's kind of, I don't want to say it's finding the middle ground between Charlie Strong and Tom Herman and what those two messages were, but it's just, it's there's, like I said, there's just that chill, just relaxed vibe where there's a coach that understands this is going to be a building process, but he has not come in and gone scorched earth. He does like some of the ingredients in the cupboard, so to say. He's not walking in publicly saying that the cupboard is bare or you're lacking this, that, and the other. Now, when he's talking about transfer portal stuff, he has talked about based on their scheme, there are on both schemes, on both sides of the ball, specifically defensively, there have been areas where they needed to go get bodies. You know, that hybrid defensive end outside linebacker position is one where there's a reason they went and got Ray Thornton from LSU. There's a reason Ovia Gofu's coming in from Notre Dame, and Snoop's other favorite Longhorn besides Alfred Collins, Ben Davis is coming over from Alabama. See, Snoop, once Ben Davis like enrolls and he gets a jersey number, you never have to see that question on the text line again, because we'll know officially Ben Davis is on the 40 acres at that point. But he's talked about, you know, kind of personnel issues in terms of what they're lacking based on scheme, but he hasn't just come out and thrown any position group under the bus. He actually said, I asked him about lines of scrimmage yesterday, and he talked about he's really been really impressed with just their talent on the interior defensive line. He likes some of the competition they've got on the offensive line with some veteran guys. So, all in all, I'll say this, Snoop, Sark's press conferences and media gatherings and availabilities, and when he's spoken publicly, and yesterday was his first time to be off campus speaking to a group of people in a setting like that. It's boring, and I say that in the most complimentary way possible. Like, you're not going to get just these, you know, sound bites that are going to sound awesome on the air, but it's definitely not, you know, just throwaway one-liners either. There's some thought, there's some substance to it. Sark definitely putting his own spin on it. So we will, I'll tell you what, let's take a break. We'll talk more about that coming up in the notebook. If we get a call from Texas softball coach Mike White, we will definitely get Coach White on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline. But let's take a break, and we'll plan on talking either softball with Mike White, or we'll dive into a little bit more of what Steve Sarkisian had to say yesterday in Houston. This is Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Wagner, rolling along on a Thursday, Light the Tower. Jeff House, Snoop Daniel, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. A lot of great birthdays today, including Andre 3000.
Yeah, that's why I play. And this is a little less known song. Two dope boys in a Cadillac.
It's not less known if you know Outkast.
Yeah, well. Oh, yes, sir.
You know, so here's what's wild. Because when we did the music survey, Outkast was one of those acts that I'm like, I got to put Outkast in there somewhere. And Outkast just didn't make the cut. Like, Outkast and Tom Petty were the two acts. I'm like, they got to be somewhere in my survey. It just didn't happen. But that's kind of why I want to mulligan on the music survey,
yeah,
Snoop. Just maybe go
too.
Back and really get some time to think about it. I'm not talking like Chad Hastings level preparation, but just, you know, because Chad, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad like cut his own songs, right?
He sent me the exact portion of the songs, right, of each song that he wanted to play. I'm like, whoa.
So, right. So when Andre 3000 did, I even forget what the name of the show was. It was an ABC show. It was like American Crime or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm talking about? It was like based like in a private school, and there was like some kind of scandal, and Andre 3000 was one of the parents. You know what show I'm talking about? It was on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
I can Google the name of it, but I was too busy reading about Julio Jones and Shannon Sharp during the break. But So he was. They filmed part of that in San Marcos because the school my wife works at, they used the gym and a couple of the buildings around campus to film some of the scenes. And of course, my wife, who's like, my wife and I, like, our interests in the pop culture realm are complete polar opposites. And she's like, she's like, some rapper was here filming a show.
I'm
like,
Dispatches from Elsewhere, I think is the name of the show.
I'm like, who was it? Some rapper. Yeah, he was filming that show. She's like, I was like, are you meaning to tell me that Andre 3000 was at your work today, just walking around, and you didn't bother to tell me? So, yeah, and she was like, why is that important? And so then I have to go in the whole deal and explain to her.
Have you ever heard of Miss Jackson?
And, of course, she cared none even after I explained the whole deal and why I'm an Outkast fan and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's just
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
A swing and a miss, Snoop.
You know what, real quick on Outkast, and I'll keep it short because this is a sports show, but I always felt they were the ballsiest of groups because they went from, like, gangsters in the first album with Southern Playlist to Cadillac Funky Music for Your Trunk to Egyptian Aliens in the second album, and then to something even weirder in the third. Like, they could have just chilled and been from the hood and made money, but the fact that they went out on a limb like that to be creative, it sent them to, like, all new heights.
Stankonia's got its own sound.
Yes.
Speaker box has its,
below.
It has its own sound. Yeah.
So anyway,
every Outkast album, you get a little bit something different. Nice evolution by Big Boy and Andre 3000. Hey, real quick, so I sent. Thank you, CB, for sending me this. This came out yesterday. Like I said, when I was out of the loop, apparently Julio Jones did not know he was on the air when Shannon Sharp put him on the air, and it's apparently created a huge big ordeal. The Falcons are not happy with it. So, yeah, probably why. You know, like Eve's dropping on Craig right now and putting it over the air probably would mean. Not that Craig would ever say anything profane.
Well, let's see. Hold on.
All I hear is clapping. Just a little ambient noise. Okay. All right. Let's get to the notebook.
Oh, yeah. Let's get to the notebook. Why don't we?
Jeff House Longhorn Notebook. Brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
So let's talk a little football. Like I said in the first segment, I was down in Houston yesterday. Steve Sarkisian speaking at a luncheon for the Touchdown Club of Houston. He had his media availability, which went for about 20 minutes, and then his presentation to the crowd, just going over the team, lasted for about 30 to 35. So some good meaty conversation with Steve Sarkisian yesterday. Maybe the biggest news, Snoop, on the team front in terms of newsy-type items, Jake Smith, who, as we know, suffered a foot injury in the very first spring practice.
Yep.
Steve Sarkisian's first practice, he loses Jake Smith for the rest of the spring to a foot injury. But the good news is when Texas starts workouts, summer workouts, in less than a week, next Wednesday on June 2nd, Jake Smith is expected to be full go for those workouts. And that's going to give a little shot in the arm to the receiver core, that position group that, Snoop, you know I love so much, and I talk a lot about the receiver group on this show.
That is trash.
Well, not that it's trash.
No, just joking.
Not that it's trash. But again, it bears repeating, like, all, you know, the injury histories with these guys. And Jake Smith, he's kind of, when Sark got the job, Jake Smith was as good as Bijan Robinson is. And, you know, Joshua Moore is your returning leading receiver. And, you know, what Kyle Flood, I hope can do with this offensive line. Because, good Lord, like, I talk about it all the time, man, Texas has got to get to the point where you're turning your blue chip offensive line recruits out of high school, your 4- and 5-star guys, the 5-stars if you can get them, and the 4-stars that you do get. This program's got to get to a point where they're turning those guys into NFL prospects. But all that said, I thought the one guy who could benefit the most from the coaching change and the scheme change on offense was Jake Smith. Because when you look at his skill set, like, we never really got to see him fully unlocked under Tom Herman. Part of that was some of the coaching decisions. Part of that was Jake Smith's inability to be on the field at times through various injuries. And for him to just go down in practice number one and be gone for the rest of the spring, it's just, you know, the proverbial turd in a punch bowl, man. It's just, gosh, it's so just like...
Proverbial?
Yeah, because there is no literal turd in a punch bowl.
Oh.
Yeah. It just kind of ruined the whole spring for me on offense almost. Like, I know Bijan Robinson had some nice moments in scrimmages, and, you know, Roschon Johnson. They've got a nice 1-2 punch in the backfield, and we'll get to that throughout the course of the show. Sark's thoughts on using more two-back looks. But, you know, I really felt like Jake Smith needed the reps in the spring to get familiar with the offense so Sark could really weaponize him. And if you can figure out a way to put Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington on the field at the same time, and again, we talked about the rigidity of the receiver roles under Tom Herman, and Sark's, when I kind of asked Sark about that, I didn't mention Tom Herman by name, but talking about, you know, you've got X receivers and Z receivers and Y receivers, and is there a struggle to get maybe two guys at that same position on the field together? And he's just like, on the Zoom call, just looked at me like I had a third eye, and he's like, no, we don't do that. We just get our best players on the field, which was refreshing to hear. But we didn't see that enough under Tom Herman. So if Jake Smith is healthy, and if Jordan Whittington can continue what he did in the spring, and with Troy O'Meary and Joshua Moore, again, if Troy O'Meary's good to go, and we still haven't seen Troy O'Meary really be unleashed as he continues to recover from the knee injury, this receiver core has a chance to be probably in the top half of the Big 12, but that and $5 will get you a cup of coffee. I've just got to see it to believe it. And guys have to stay healthy. And guys have to be on the field. And guys have to be productive. And they've got to deliver. They, you know, like I just go back to, you know, Jake Smith's made plays in his career. But think about the big third down that he dropped where there was nothing but 60 yards of field in front of him in the TCU game. How different that game might have been had he pulled that in. So a lot of things to clean up in that receiver group. But a healthy Jake Smith makes that group, gives that group so much more upside to be better. June 2nd is a key date. Like I said, that's next Wednesday when Texas is going to begin summer workouts. And I like what Sark said. Everybody's focused on June 1st, which is when recruiting opens back up. Texas can start hosting recruits on campus again. They've already got massive visit weekends planned in the month of June. We've gone over that. We've had Mike Roach on the show, our recruiting editor at Horns 24/7. You can get over to Horns 24/7 where Mike and Nick Harris are doing their thing, getting you ready for what's going to be a massive, massive month of June on the 40 acres on the recruiting front. But Sark said his message to the staff has been, look, yes, recruiting is important. It is the lifeblood of your program, but don't lose sight of the current team, because like we talked about in the last segment, one of his messages has been, yes, there's talent, but this staff has to be a developmental staff. They've got to develop the talent they've got. And that kind of leads me into the transfer portal topic. That was a big topic of discussion for Sark yesterday. He got asked about it in the media portion, and then kind of in the fan Q&A, he got asked about the portal also. And this is what I think people lose sight of when you talk about the transfer portal, Snoop. Like, anytime a name pops up in the transfer portal, it's like, oh, Texas should go get this guy. Texas should go get this guy. There's an offensive lineman in the portal. Why hasn't Texas taken an offensive lineman from the portal? The term you've got to remember, whether you're talking about, you know, graduate transfers, and really now with the one-time transfer rule, anybody's immediately eligible, so you don't even have to separate those two categories anymore, or you're talking about high school recruits or whatever, the term you need to remember is initial counter. And in one, basically the way it works out, in as simple terms as I can put it, basically in one calendar year, you're allowed to add 25 initial counters to your program. That is any player receiving first-time financial aid at your school. Now, the catch there is walk-ons, if you got a walk-on who earns a scholarship, he does not take up an initial counter spot, which is why it is huge to develop your walk-on program, because if you can find a Dylan Haynes, or a Kai Money, or maybe like a Luke Brockermeyer, or maybe down the road a Mookie Taft, or Zane Miters, if you can find one of those guys that is capable of being a scholarship guy, it's a win-win for you because it doesn't cost you an initial counter spot, and that's a position you've been able to develop. Not only does it not cost you an initial counter spot, but that's one fewer body you've got to go look for in the portal down the road. They prevent gaps in the pipeline. So a good walk-on program, it does nothing but positive things for your program. I know it's easier said than done in the era of 85 scholarships to have a good walk-on program, but that's something I will you give Tom Herman credit for, that because that got started under his watch, really wanting to develop that walk-on program, and Sark's staff has kind of taken that. They've been passed the torch, and they're running with it, really trying to continue developing that walk-on program on the 40 acres.
But I don't know why people give Kai Money such a hard time. He is like 6 foot 180.
But that goes back to the Kai Money conversation we had last week, though, Snoop. Like, if you see Kai Money on the field, like, this isn't a staff that's got some kind of emotional attachment to Kai Money. Maybe like Tom Herman was accused of having it. So I'm like, that was, let me be honest, like, I get a lot of fan feedback, and that was one of the pieces of fan feedback and kind of this theory that Tom Herman, being a former Division III wide receiver who was a try-hard kind of guy, really maybe saw some of himself in a guy like Kai Money. And we know that Tom Herman now, we know that he was pretty heavy-handed with how he handled everything at that receiver position, from recruiting to maybe rotations, everything in between. So, but now you've got a new staff, and Kai Money's still playing a pretty prominent role. So if Kai Money's, this goes back to the point I've made about him, if he's still playing a prominent role in the fall, don't blame Kai Money. Blame the other guys that didn't step up and take a job from him. That you're at that point now in the Kai Money situation. But real quick on the transfer portal. So initial counter is the phrase that you need to remember. And why are initial counters important? Because transfers count as initial counters. So when you're going to the next recruiting class, and where initial counters really come into play, like when you get to a signing day, you get to that early signing period in December, and you're talking about early enrollees. And when you hear the term count back, we can count X number of guys back, that's what they're talking about. So let's say in a year you've got 22 initial counters, right? That's the number you added in the spring and summer, all that. You had 22 initial counters. Well, no matter how many early enrollees, let's say you've got 6 early enrollees coming in for the following spring, you can roll 3 of those back to get you to 25 before you get into the count for the following year. That's kind of a way, you know, you can, and it's very much within the rules to manipulate the numbers that way. But basically the way Sark looks at it is if you take a transfer, that's basically one less counter for a high school player you've got the following year. That's why you're not going to see Texas just go you know what to the wall and just take as many transfers as they possibly can, because how you build a program, you've still got to recruit high school guys and develop them. And I think that goes back to the offensive line conversation. Texas didn't take a transfer body in the offensive line, but they'll get a healthy Derek Kerstetter back for really, he kind of got into some work, you know, doing some individual stuff. And kind of some half-line stuff towards the end of the spring. And we saw him dress out for the spring game, which I thought was maybe one of the more significant storylines we saw in the spring game, was Derek Kerstetter out there in full pads. But you'll get Kerstetter back, and maybe in that sense, Kerstetter might count as your transfer guy because you didn't have him in the throes of the competition in the spring. You will during fall camp. But I think Kyle Flood and Sark and A.J. Milby and that offensive staff, Snoop, I think they're taking that approach that I just talked about. I think with the offensive line specifically, they've got guys like Tyler Johnson going into his third year in the program, in the middle of his third year in the program. Same for a guy like Isaiah Hookfin. You know, you've got a guy like Rafidi Girmay, who's been a depth guy for the entirety of his career at Texas. And you know, Tope Amade's a veteran guy that's, you know, been around the program for a while, is now on the third head coach he's played for at Texas, played for Charlie Strong, played for Tom Herman. And now you're going to play for Steve Sarkisian. Denzel Okafor, same thing. So you've got enough guys there that you should be able to have a good, healthy competition and come out of this with, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 starting caliber players based on the guys you've got. And you've got to start developing those young guys. Like, the focus should be on developing a Logan Parr, a Jake Majors, a Jalen Garth, Hookfin and Johnson, like I just mentioned. That's where the focus needs to be. Maybe not adding older bodies that are only going to be here for a year, but to really develop that offensive line and get it to where it needs to be for Texas to be competing for the Big 12 championship year in and year out. And there's not enough there isn't enough time left in this show or any of the shows I'm going to have next week or that we'll have throughout the summer to break down all the issues with the offensive line in the last 10 to 15 years. But the bottom line is, at some point, you've got to start developing those guys, and that's the approach the staff has taken. Unlike outside linebacker, where that's been a scheme change, where they felt like, hey, they needed a body type like a Ray Thornton, a Ben Davis, an Ovie Ogofu. Devin Richardson's going to start on the inside. Inside linebacker is another position with the Overshown injury in the spring, and then Juwan Mitchell entering the transfer portal. You just needed to add an experienced body, and you did that with Devin Richardson. Maybe the same thing at safety. We know Texas has looked at safeties in the portal, so it's just not necessarily best available player Texas is going after, and it's not even necessarily, hey, can this guy just come in and be a depth guy? They're looking for guys to fill A, specific needs, or B, is can this guy play a role, based on scheme changes, do we have now a new need that this roster, as it was previously constructed, just simply didn't fill? We'll talk more about Sark yesterday at the Touchdown Club of Houston, that event. We'll get into that in hour number two. But coming up next, we're going to close out hour number one with a little Inconceivable. We'll do that when we come back on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Light the Tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete has suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, visit austin-orthopedics.com. Let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his team get you back in the game, not just on the field, on the court, back in the game of life, feeling real good. That's austin-orthopedics.com for Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. All right, Snoop. This, I guess this is about six or some odd weeks old now that that this came out. I had no idea this story existed until I was made aware of it this morning. So, and I was made aware of it because, I don't know if you heard the news, so Ellen DeGeneres is stepping down from the talk show format after her next season gets concluded, so I guess in 2022. And Kelly Clarkson's going to take over that time slot.
Yes.
So
should have come a long way.
Yeah. So Kelly Clarkson, who, by the way, I've been a big fan of Kelly Clarkson. Not gonna lie, I happen to find her very attractive.
Yeah.
she did share a story. So on her show, this was back in April, she had Clint Black on, country music legend Clint Black, and he was promoting, I guess, a podcast that he was doing, and he was talking about on the podcast format. Sarah Evans, another, if you're familiar with country music,
Sarah Evans. No place that far, anyway.
She apparently had shared a story on Clint Black's podcast, his little interview series, about how she went number one on stage. And Clint Black, kind of tongue-in-cheek, said, well, how many of us haven't gone number one on stage? Well, I don't know if this might change opinions of Kelly Clarkson. If you haven't heard it, if you have heard it, I don't know if it changes your opinion or not, but... Yeah, Kelly Clarkson might have went a little too far.
Well, I'll tell you right now, there was one time it wasn't pee, my friend. I got some kind of wrecked up from some kind of food, and I literally, we were in an arena, and I shouldn't tell this story, but like I said, my man, I don't have a filter. I had to run backstage to my quick change. I grabbed this poor trash can and... Boy, I destroyed it. It was bad. It was bad, Clint. And we might have to edit this out, but I'm just saying, it happens. What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, it wasn't edited out. It went over live on the air. So, yeah, Kelly Clarkson just apparently had to go pot and during the show and just unleashed hell on a trash can.
And she says she destroyed it in her own words.
Yeah.
At least...
That's what we call bad bathroom, Snoop.
She didn't go Bobby Hurley on him.
No, it's...
You remember when Bobby Hurley just... It was on the court? Do you remember that? I do. Duty.
Going all... Paul Pierce is probably the most infamous one now.
I didn't know he...
No, but you remember that scene where he had to get taken off on a wheelchair because of the ankle injury? And it wasn't an ankle injury. It was a South End problem.
Man, you got it anyway. All right. Well, good for Kelly Clarkson to be so open. You know, she's a real girl.
Humanizes people. You know what I'm saying?
We've
all had strange experiences. I can honestly admit on these airwaves, I've never torn up a trash can, but, such is life, man. Such is life. All right. That's going to do it for Inconceivable.
That's all you need.
And for hour number one here on Light the Tower on the Horn.